Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, I'm Alan Cumming, and welcome to My Shelves. My shelves are sort of a museum of my life. I like to keep things from my travels that are, to me anyway, the very essence of the experiences I've had. Sort of portals, if you will, to a specific time and place. And the inspiration for stories and memories and musings. Here's one of my favourite pictures. I found it in the attic of a flat I used to live in London. And what it is a sort of a sepia sketch of a little Boy Scout, a little sort of camp little Boy Scout who's got his hand on his hip and one leg kind of at a jaunty, you know, slightly showgirl kind of angle. And he's looking over his shoulder, and over his shoulder, touching his shoulder, is Jesus. For some reason. I have no idea either. Here's a bottle of Moroccan rose water facial spray for some reason. No idea. And today I'm talking with Marisa Berenson. And then you said, what's the second one? And I said, the second one is called Just Fuck Me by Marisa Berenson.
Welcome, bienvenue. Welcome.
Marisa Berenson is a legend. There's no two ways about it. She is an internationally renowned actress and model. Her first job, her first movie, was Luchino Visconti's Death in Venice. Her second film, Cabaret, Bob Fosse's Cabaret. So she starred as small. A couple of films later, she worked with Stanley Kubrick in Barry Lyndon. She has had such an incredible career. She's still works in the fields of acting, modelling and all sorts. She now lives in Marrakesh, and that's where she joined me to talk about the item from my shelves. And the object from my shelves is a jar of jam. You'll find out more about it later when I talk to Marisa, but it's a jar of jam. It has a little sticker on it that says D4L NYC SNET 15301. Rule number one, everybody needs jam. Then my signature, Alan, and two kisses. D4L means Design for Living. NYC, of course, means New York City. And I was in the play Design for Living in 2001. It's a play by Noel Coward, a really incredible play, so ahead of its time. And also in that production was my lovely guest today, Marisa Berenson. There's also a sticker on this jar of jam of me. It's a picture of me as Mr. Floop from Spy Kids, which was out at the time. And I thought it would just be rather jolly to stick a sticker of me on this jar of jam. To find out why I actually gave the whole cast a jar of jam as a first night present, stay tuned, everybody. So I've got here the thing that I want to talk about from my shelves, which is this little jar of jam. I've still got it. A jar. I mean, I daren't open it. It'll probably explode, but...
I kept mine too.
Oh, you did?
I did. I have the jar. I have the posters. I have everything from the play, and I haven't opened it. No, I just kept it.
No, I don't advise you to open
as
it.
As a relic.
So it's got a little. I love it. It says on it. I've forgotten this about it. It says so it's 15301. So it's the 15th of March we opened. The joke, of course, is that thing is. Rule number one, everybody needs jam, which is the quote that, do you remember that story that Noel Coward?
He went
to lunch with he was doing a play, and he went and took a young actress who's the sort of the ingenue out to lunch, and he, you know, wanted to sort of get to know her better, and she was very nervous, and she was talking about stuff and saying, well, said all this stuff during the lunch. And at the end of it, he said to her, my dear, you haven't complimented me a single time during this lunch, not one single compliment. And she was shocked. And she said, oh my gosh, Mr. Coward, I just thought you would know that you're such a legend. I'm just so honored to work with you. I didn't realize that. And he said, my dear, rule number one, everybody needs jam. And I just think that's it, because we do. We all need a little bit of
sweetness. Sweetness.
Yes.
A little sweetness in our lives.
And so I got this jam made and gave it to everybody. And also it says on it, Snet. Do you remember Snet? So Jennifer Ealy,
yeah,
who played
I remember
Gerda,
Jennifer Wells.
Lovely, yes. There's an actress called Mariah Aitken, who is sort of an expert on Coward and did all these talks. And she'd seen this talk or a TV show that Mariah Aitken had done about Coward. And she said that there's an acronym for how you perform Noel Coward's work. And it's SNET. And it stands for Style, Naturalism, Energy, and Turning on an Emotional Sixpence.
I love it. I love that. Well, he's one of the most wonderful people. I mean, to play in those wonderful plays of his are just
incredible.
Oh yes, it was so much. It was so, because it's so witty and sophisticated and glamorous,
yeah.
And at the same time, you know, it's kind of talks about important things, but sort of with an amazing sort of depth with a légèreté to it, you know, sort of.
Yes, yes.
The way he looked at life was wonderful.
And so ahead of his time, actually.
So ahead of
design. Design for a Living is basically about a throuple. That was written, and that was written in the late 20s. And it was so funny. I think actually people thought we had changed it because when we did it in 2001, I think. They thought it was because of me and my sort of reputation, they thought we'd made it, we'd sexed it up a bit more than it actually was. And it absolutely wasn't. And I think that's interesting at that time. And I guess it was, you know, the equivalent of the Weimar time in Germany and all the kind of exciting things that were happening.
Exactly.
He was writing in that time about these quite progressive things.
Exactly. I mean, the 20s were very progressive. I mean, very, very already very daring and very out. I mean, it sort of was after, you know, transformed everything, actually, from the turn of the century. All of a sudden they went into this free spirits or free sex. I mean, like sometimes, sort of like what we did in the 70s, you know, everything was very kind of very free and very creative and very daring everything. And
I think it's interesting that after, in the 20s, it was sort of a reaction. It was after the Spanish flu epidemic. So there was a kind of a big zest for life after that. And I imagine after COVID, there'll be a similar sort of,
well, I guess,
thing.
I don't know, though, because, you know, people are so traumatized. And now there's like, this has sort of changed, I think, the everything in the world and the way people think now and the way people act and the whole world has sort of changed. I mean, I want to think in a very positive way that certain things are changing for the better, because I see some very interesting things happening, new ways of doing things and new ways of inventing oneself. And well, even in our business, I think that's going to change a lot too. I mean, it's just unfortunately going to the movies and going to the theater, which we love so much, is something that's been put on hold for the moment. But because of that, everybody's home and everybody's on their television set. So everything is going to be a lot about, you know, television series and movies for television, and even film festivals, you know, that are shown online now or on television.
Yeah.
And there's a whole new way, even fashion. The good thing about it is that millions of more people can see these things.
Yes.
You know, when you go on Amazon, for instance, I'm supposed to do a film for Amazon. And so millions of people watch that film because it's on Amazon or on Netflix now, rather than a wonderful film maybe that one would only see in a festival or where one may not see at all because it only stays a week in a movie house. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's a shame in a way because I love the going to the movies, you know, or going to the theater. And I mean, the fact that one can't go to the theater anymore or do anything in the theater. I spent last year doing, you were talking about Weimar, doing a thing called Berlin Cabaret, where I thought of you so much.
I I saw pictures of that on your Instagram. Well, that's very cabaret-ish.
It was just that period.
It was you being a cabaret singer. You were being a sort of a Sally Bowles.
I was the kind of the madam of this cabaret.
Whoa.
Yeah, a total madam who had sort of been, in that time during the two wars when survival was everything and the Nazis came in, and I have this club called, this club where I perform, and I have I sort of protect artists and writers,
right,
and journalists,
right,
and stuff. It was a fantastic, fun thing to do, and
that sounds amazing.
I sang and danced for the first time.
Look at you, you're a showgirl.
I loved it. I'd always wanted to do it. It was so much fun. I thought of you a lot.
When I first started to do, concerts, cabaret shows on my own.
Yeah.
I was so nervous. I mean, like you're saying, it's a big leap to go from just being an actor to being yourself.
Yeah.
And even to perform in that way as an actor as well, that very sort of no fourth wall talking to the audience stuff. Anyway, when I was about to do my first concert, I talked to Liza about it. And she said this amazing thing about how she thinks about singing a song, which is like a song is like a play. It's got three acts and you're a character inside it and you have these conflicts and everything and you meet different people in the song, but then, the song, it comes to an end and then the curtain comes down and that's the end of the song. And it's so simple.
So brilliant. She's so brilliant, Liza.
She's incredible about being a showman like that.
Yeah, so
having
true.
Authenticity yet still having pizzazz.
Right.
She's
one of the most brilliant people on the planet, as far as also intelligence, talent, but the intelligence that goes with it and the sensitivity and all of it. It's just, she's quite amazing. Yeah. But
she's
you were amazing in cabaret after that too. You were wonderful.
There's you.
Yeah.
There's you. Did you know Liza before you made the film of cabaret?
No, I met her on the film. I met her and we became instant buddies, and we still are. I mean, we still see each other, talk to each other.
Yeah. I remember there was a hilarious picture of you two at the races that I saw.
Yeah.
What was that about? I can't imagine you two going to the horse races.
Well, I said to Liza when we finished the film and she was going out with this guy who was really not right for her and she wasn't very happy with him. So I said, darling, if you get back home and all of a sudden you feel you need to escape and get away, just call me up and come on over, And I was going out with David de Rothschild at the time, I was engaged to. And she literally a week later, she calls me up and she said, darling, I'm coming over. So I said, okay. So I said to David, Liza's coming to spend the summer with us. And so she came over.
And where was she coming to?
It was like August, so we were going to Marbella.
Oh, you were in Spain.
And then Deauville, which is where the horses were.
In France, right?
Yeah, in France, in Deauville. And so she arrived over and she had all these wonderful suitcases full of these wonderful outfits that Halston had sort of made a book for her of everything she needed to wear that was like a photograph of the thing, a sketch with a fabric, and what she had to wear at the races, what she had to wear at any occasion,
Wow.
It was so fun. So we used to go to the races in Deauville, she and I would just, because she's so funny, we would laugh about everything. We had the best time. And so I sort of introduced her to the French society at the time. I gave a big party for her she had a wonderful time and we sort of giggled our way through life ever since.
She is such a giggler.
She is such funny. We have so much fun.
And you were saying in the 70s and how I wonder what that was in Weimar. There was sort of, it was a reaction to the sort of depression and things and the Spanish flu and everything. What was the war? Yes. What was the 70s a reaction to?
Well, I think, you know, like in the 20s, you know, they threw away the corsets. Women became emancipated. I mean, you know, it's a whole other thing. And in the 70s, I think, you know, coming out of the war in the, with the end of the 40s or in the 45 or whenever it was, and then the 50s was kind of building up to, you know, more equality, more freedom for women, I mean, it still wasn't sort of the most free time for women or to express oneself and everything. But I think in the 60s, there was this kind of idealism and this sort of desire for freedom and for peace and love and, you know, that whole, really, and I think it was a generation of sort of idealists, really, that wanted a whole other world. So started to express themselves in that way, although it didn't last very long, because I think in the 80s and the 90s, it started to change again with AIDS and with a lot of, you know, things. But during that small period of the end of the 60s and the 70s, there was kind of a burst of of wanting something else, a different kind of world and you know, a different kind of life. And although,
and where were you in your life at the time? What was happening with you?
Well, I was very, very young. So I was 16 when my father died, going on 17. He died in New York, and he took me to this big ball, I remember, which was the last thing I ever went to with him. And Diana Vreeland was there. And
Harper's Bazaar editrix.
No, she was Vogue.
She was at Vogue then. She was at Vogue first, and then she went to Harper's Bazaar.
No, she was at Harper's Bazaar first, then she was at Vogue, yeah.
Oh, I see.
And she had known me when I was like 4 years old, or, you know, babies born. And she was friends with my parents and my grandmother. And she sort of rediscovered me then. And she said, we have to photograph Marisa. And that was it, you know. She said that at the ball. She said, we have to photograph Marisa. And that was it. So from then on in, I was propelled into this world of fashion and just the world, you know, full stop.
What were you wearing? Do you remember what you were wearing at the ball?
Oh, I was wearing a very, very sort of a goody-goody little, you know, girl dress with a white collar and sort of a pale green silk dress, I remember, with a white collar and a little chignon, looking very proper and very kind of a little debutante, but very innocent, you know. I was still very kind of young.
And that didn't last long then.
And then, boom, out into the world I went, in the midst of this kind of amazing world that just was just this whirlwind of the most extraordinary people.
Did Avedon photograph you?
It was like all of the great photographers, Avedon and Penn and Bert Stern and David Bailey and Cecil Beaton and you name it. I mean, all of them. But then apart from just that world, there was all of, you know, there was another world of Andy Warhol and all of the artists at the time. And so I was part of the Warhol group and all of those people. And then
I remember you told me was Andy Warhol like your wedding photographer once?
He came to my wedding and he actually wrote a whole chapter about my wedding. And
I just love that's who your wedding photographer is. We have to get someone to take snaps at the wedding. Let's get Andy Warhol.
He came as a friend and just decided he was going to take pictures. I didn't ask him, you know. But he was just a really good friend. So he came and the day before, as all the furniture, because I'd redecorated the house, as all the furniture and the flowers and the tent was going up and everything, and he was sitting there going, oh gosh, this is so much fun. You know how Andy talks. Oh gosh, Mary, the gosh, this is so. And then he just did this whole chapter on my wedding, as it was one of the, you know, people are still talking about that wedding.
Why was it so amazing? What did you do?
It was just, there was, the whole world was there. I mean, there were 800 people, the whole of Hollywood.
800?
800 people.
Oh my
in
God.
My home in Beverly Hills with every film star and great director and God knows who came. The entire world, and then this whole plane came over from Europe, this that they had, you know, this friend of mine had rented this huge plane, and this, all these people came over from Paris on it. And so there was like, and then it was, I don't know, you know, it was so mediatized and so, it was just something that nobody had ever seen in Hollywood like that in somebody's house, you know, with all those people.
Yes.
That they did, I don't know, they made videos. They went, I mean, Rona Barrett did a whole film on it for television.
Wow.
About how marriage was back and romance was back and everything, you know, and there were all these amazing people there. And I didn't even know what was going on in my, you know, I was floating through that thinking, where am I? What's happening in my life, you know, kind of thing.
But like, you, did you have a good time at it?
I did. And I think I was in the world, but not of the world, which is a feeling I have a lot.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That sort of thing of like, it's happening to you, but you're also outside looking at it.
Exactly.
At the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Sam Walker. I've spent the last few months talking to this guy.
I'm a hunter. It's what I do.
He's called KC.
Our rules of engagement are pretty simple. If we have to pull a trigger on one person, they're all going to go.
He's an American vigilante.
And there is one of the biggest men I've ever seen, and he's got a knife in his hand.
He rescues kidnapped children.
There's no feeling in the world like putting a child back in the arms of its parents.
By any means necessary.
Well, it's ugly. You want me to make sure I don't hurt anybody?
He scares me.
And he kind of looked at me and I said, I swear to God, I said, if you do anything other than what I told you to do, I said, I'm going to kill you right here.
And he might scare you.
About got tears in your eyes right now just thinking about that, don't you?
Download the podcast, American Vigilante.
Download American Vigilante.
Out now.
Now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, you've been so involved with fashion all through your life. Like you said, you started off as a young, young girl being a model. And I just wondered how important all that is to you now.
I think, well, I look at that past and I'm very grateful because I just so in awe of actually all those people and of that time that I lived and how lucky I was. You know, I just feel like I was so blessed to have all of that and to have worked with all those amazing people. And fashion then was very, very different. The whole atmosphere, you know, is very different than it is now. Now it's very, you know, it's all big business.
Yes.
And
Less about art, very and more corporate, about commerce.
Very corporate, yeah. And very, you know. And it's less about art and less about creativity. And it's, but I'm still, you know, I still, you know, I'm still, I still do a lot of things for magazines. I still do campaigns. I still do lots of stuff like that. And I still love it, you know. I'm still grateful that actually people still want to photograph me and do stuff like that, you know.
Why do you think it is that some people like being photographed and others don't?
You know, I don't know, because I felt so free in front of a camera, which I never thought that would ever happen to me, because I was so shy as a child and I wasn't prepared for that at all. And it just happened that I felt very, very free and very liberated when I was in front of a camera. And it was inexplainable. I think I sort of became more myself than in real life, where I was a little more timid and shy. And actually, it gave me self-assurance more than in my real life. And then when I did Death in Venice with Luchino Visconti, that's one thing he said to me the first day I filmed. He said, you know, Marisa, you're not afraid of the camera. And that is, you know, wonderful. So I felt comfortable, and you have a love affair with the cat, you know, with the camera. And then I worked.
Was that the first film you'd done?
Death in Venice. Yeah.
Oh my God. Hilarious. That's so funny. That's your first movie. but I think it's interesting. I work sometimes with, you know, I really like getting photographed too. And I really understand that thing that I'm able to, you know, because of some of the images that I've done, quite racy ones, people think I'm much more of an extrovert in my life than I actually am.
Right.
I mean, I have fun and I'm you know, I have a laugh and everything, but I think that my image through still pictures gives people a different perspective. And that's partly because I'm able to express that side of myself through the lens. I think that's what you're talking about. You almost, you kind of become a different person somehow almost.
Absolutely. That's what's so much fun about doing photographs or being an actor, is that you can just become, you know, something else. And I love that, to transform into anything, you know, and sort of be a chameleon.
I think it's weird sometimes. Do you ever find this when you do a photograph with another person, when you've got like another actor you've got to be photographed with, and sometimes you realize they are like you were talking about that film I did with Jennifer Jason Leigh, The Anniversary Party, and she loves being photographed, and I've always loved the images of her that I've seen, and I think her father used to photograph her a lot, and she just says she feels really comfortable in front of the camera, and so we had to get photographed a lot, obviously, when you do a film like that together. I really loved the feeling of being with someone else who understood that thing of letting go a bit. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you're with someone who doesn't feel like that, you're letting go and they're not. And you feel
very uncomfortable.
You feel crazy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just in us, you know. It's impossible to describe what it is to be an actor or to have that sense of freedom or in front of a camera. It's just, you know, I don't know about you, but I find that I'm never the same in a rehearsal or in a reading or in a thing than I am when the camera is actually rolling.
Yes.
You know, do you have that feeling too?
Absolutely. There's a sort of extra
something happens.
Pizzazz. Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of magic.
Yeah. The magic. Exactly.
In Design for Living, you played this sort of society grand dame of New York and it's in the scene where the two boys come back to New York. They've been on their own together. The play is about sort of this throuple, but that first of all it's me and Jennifer Ely are a couple, and then Dominic West comes and sort of steals her away, and then they're a couple, and I go back and in the second act, and at the end of that act it's me and Dominic are together, and then in the third act when you come in, Jennifer has married and is in this sort of very glamorous set in New York City in a big skyscraper, and Dominic and I come back to kind of get her. We realize that the only way we can all be happy is to be three of us together. And you were, I remember the curtain went up and there was this huge set,
staircase,
spiral staircase that you had to come down. It was the most glamorous, amazing entrance.
In that sort of satin gray pearl dress.
Shiny
yes. Pearl satin dress.
And you had your hair up in a big sort of almost like a German thing, kind of up in a sort of thing around your head. What would you call that? A chignon?
A chignon. Oui, a chignon. Oh, we used to have giggles, remember, sometimes?
Oh, my God.
In the middle of the scene.
Totally. I remember you called Jennifer's Glenda. Her character's called Gilda, and you kept calling her Glenda. And there was one night you went, "Oh, blah blah blah, Glenda. I mean Gilda." It just sent us off.
You were laughing so much. You sort of said something to me sotto voce.
Oh, I'm terrible. I think when that happens and you just laugh, and we laughed like drains on that, you just have to laugh because it's worse trying to keep
you
it
have
in.
To go with it, you know, kind of
you have to get it out. Yeah.
It's part of the flow.
Totally.
Yeah.
I remember we used to always go to Café Under Toit on 43rd Street afterwards.
Right.
And it was such a hoot. I remember one time you were talking about, because I remember you used to always have little potions and kind of little things you would rub on your, I bet you do, yes. Little things on your neck and your thingy points. What do you call them? Your pressure points and everything. And always little rubbing little things and little, you're like a little apothecary, a walking apothecary.
I am.
And then one time you had you were squirting your fragrance before we were going out to dinner, and I said, "Oh, what's that?" And she went, "Oh, well, it's a fragrance that I made with someone in Paris, and they were going to want to market it, but I've never thought of a name. I've never thought of the right name, so I've never actually done it, gone through with it." And I said, "You know what, Marissa, I'll have a go. I'll think of a name for you." And so a couple of days later, we were sitting, and I said, "I've got two options. I've got one that's very classy, and I think it's very lovely, and another one that's a bit more, it's going to sell more bottles, but you might not like it." And you said, "Okay, what's the first one?" I said, "First of all, L'Elixir de Marissa." And you're "I love that. I love that. It's very nice. It's very nice. Yes, it's very classy and elegant." And then you said, "What's the second one?" And I said, "The second one is called Just Fuck Me by Marissa Berenson."
Oh, you know, I still haven't. Oh, my God. That is so funny. I'd forgotten about the Fuck Me one. Oh, that's so great.
Imagine if there was a fragrance called Just Fuck Me. I think that would be hilarious.
Fuck Me is so fantastic. You know, I still haven't commercialized that perfume, and I still wear it.
And it's so delicious. I always think about that. Yes, still, yeah. Keep going. What
there's
about L'Elixir de Marissa? I think that's quite good.
We might bring it out with Just Fuck Me. It's so great.
Just fuck me. Funny. That would be great. But I always remember that smell. Like, I, you know how you associate certain people with smells. And I always think of, when I think of you, I'm getting it now, that sort of, I can't smell the thing, but I associate that, I have a memory of you that's about a smell.
That's
a nice
so
smell,
important.
Thankfully.
That's what's so important about a perfume for a woman, is that it does leave that mark, you know, indelible kind of mystery and sex appeal, or whatever it is, mysterious kind of thing that people remember. And I love that about that perfume, because people used to always know when I had been somewhere. Marissa's been here. She came up the elevator. Oh, she was in, you know, I mean, and that sort of, I love that kind of.
I love as well, like, you know, like, I like sometimes, like my mum came and there was a bag. She left a bag in our closet, and I went in to get, and I opened up the bag and I could smell her, like that lovely thing. It's sort of a perfume, but it's something else as well. It's about someone's essence as well that you get.
Exactly.
And I think great perfumes have that in them
exactly,
as well.
It's sort of, exactly, the essence of a person. Exactly. Yeah. So, well, I still wear it.
Well,
still,
you know,
wear it, darling.
That's available. Just Fuck Me is available.
Fuck Me, Just Fuck Me. I love it. I remember the. That's so funny. Do you remember those great pictures we did with David Crowland?
I do.
Those
I was just thinking about those in my dressing room.
In your dressing room, there was black and white pictures. They were so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually ran into him Oh, a couple of years ago.
We talk a lot, and he actually even came down to stay with me last year.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah.
Say hello to him. I've actually got those pictures, maybe I'll use one for this.
On the front
of the podcast.
Pictures. I love the one where there's one looking in the mirror, remember?
Yes,
it's
I do.
It's really beautiful, yeah.
And then also, I think when we were doing that, didn't Avedon come? I think I met him.
Oh, that's right.
Through you.
He did. He came to see the play. And he came backstage. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dick.
So lovely. And it's his grandson,
son,
I think.
Right.
I've been photographed by him.
Yeah, me too.
He's such a nice boy.
Such a nice boy, yeah.
I went to this amazing apartment, actually, on the Upper West Side. Looking on Central Park. I think it was his, I don't know what relation it was, his aunt's or his something's apartment. But it's amazing how that sort of tradition has carried on. I really liked him. And I really loved the pictures I did with him. They're mental. Marisa, it's been so lovely to talk to you and to have this little...
It was wonderful, darling, to talk to you.
I've missed you.
I hope we're going to...
I miss you too.
...connect at some point soon, one day.
I know, let's put that out into the world, because I think we're both believers of creatively visualising our future. So let's put it out into the universe that we do something together.
Oh, that would be
soon,
great.
And,
wonderful.
And never open that jar of jam, because I fear what will happen.
I won't,
that...
John. I'm just going to keep it preciously as a relic of our fun times together. Thank you for inviting me to talk with you. I loved it.
Well, thank you for coming down memory lane on Alan Cumming Shells.
I know, that was so lovely, actually.
Okay, I'm putting my jar of jam back on the shelf very carefully in case it explodes and bits of raspberry goo goes everywhere. And thank you all for joining me. Isn't Marisa an absolute darling? And I really hope she considers producing that perfume with, Just Fuck Me as the title. 10%. All right. See you next time on Alan Cumming Shells. Alan Cumming Shells is hosted by me, Alan Cumming, and produced by the lovely Jack Claremont. We are part of the Acast Creator Network and the Crowd Network too. We just love networks. Another Crowd Network podcast to check out is The Joe Marler Show. Joe is an England rugby player, but here's the catch. His guests are normal people doing normal jobs. He's meeting teachers, chefs, stunt women, tattoo artists, marine biologists, astronauts, and soldiers. And he's asking all the questions you or I would ask. It's as simple as that, but it's also charming because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions. Just search for The Joe Marler Show in your podcast app.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.